You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Hello and welcome into the second episode of the Last Word on Sports College Football Podcast. I'm Austin Craycraft, and I'm joined today by Tony Siracusa. How are you doing today, Tony?
I'm doing great, Austin. Thanks. How are you?
I'm good. So today we're going to kind of continue what we started last time, reviewing the Last Word on Sports Top 25. This time we're going to go 11 through 25, and number 11 on our list is Houston. They check in at number 15 on the AP poll. They're coming off a very successful 13-1 season and a win over Florida State in the Peach Bowl. Greg Ward is back, not too much skill position talent around him. And on the defensive side, they return the DBs, but they need to develop quickly as Baker Mayfield comes into town for game one. What do you think about Houston coming into this season, Tony?
Yeah, I think you hit a key point with Greg Ward. I mean, he had a great season last year. He was one of only two quarterbacks in the country, actually, to run for 1,000 yards and throw for more than 2,000. Deshaun Watson was the other one. So he's a great dual threat, but you're right. They lost some of the talent around him at the skill position. You know, he's got a running back, Duke Catalon, who transfers in from Texas. He's got Rashad Samples, a wide receiver, who's coming over from Oklahoma State, but he lost his go-to guys from last year. I think that defensively, as you pointed out, they lost some real talent. Tommy Mark and London Roberts are in the NFL. They were deep on defense, especially a linebacker. They've got Steven Taylor coming back. He had 92 tackles last year. But they're going to have to put it together quickly, as you pointed out. They've got Oklahoma in week one. I think if you're Houston, even if you lose to Oklahoma, but you put up a good showing, you keep it close for a while, I still think you've got a chance at a really, really successful season.
They do have some talent in that receiving core with Chance Allen and company. But another real key, I think, for this Houston team is just the offensive line up front. They lack some experience, and that'll be a real key to keeping Greg Ward healthy, because some people do think that Houston can sneak into that playoff after they have a couple tough games in the non-con to kind of build up their strength of schedule. And if Greg Ward isn't healthy, I don't see any chance of them being able to do that. And
I agree. I agree with you. I think that, you know, the key to the whole season is Ward. I think you're going to see Tom Herman move him around even more, just because, you know, the offensive line is still maturing. And I think you're going to see Ward throwing on the run quite a bit. You know, they've got some room to work, because after the Oklahoma game, they've got Lamar and they've got Cincinnati, who is not particularly a real threat this year. They've got Texas State after that. So they've got some wiggle room to work and develop. It's a matter of coming out of the Oklahoma game as healthy as possible, and then you've got time to develop everybody else.
Yeah, that schedule kind of unfolds for them nicely. The AAC is not as deep this year as it was last year, with Navy kind of taking a step back and Memphis too, since they're both losing their two star quarterbacks. The other game that's really going to be a key, that the only one that I can really see them losing other than Oklahoma, is that Louisville game, the second to last week of the season. It's at home on a Thursday, and it could be a big game for both teams. This is it'll be a big one, just because bowl placement will be at the edge of their minds, and we'll see who can kind of take that one away. So what are your thoughts on the schedule for the Cougars?
You know, with regards to the schedule, the Oklahoma game obviously is the highlight game. They've got some ease of schedule after that. They've got Louisville the second to last week of the season, and there's going to be a lot of attention on that, but they've got to regroup quickly, because they've got the final regular season game against Memphis. And it's on the road. And while Memphis isn't the same Memphis that they were last year without Paxton Lynch, still, they're going to be a decent team. I think if Houston goes into the last month of the season healthy, I honestly think that they win out. Do they make the playoff? Probably not. And because they're going to have one, possibly two losses. and there are enough good teams that you could look at on a 1-6 basis of six possible teams making it, that I think Houston winds up still with a really good New Year's Six bowl game, but not the playoffs.
Yeah, so do you think, what are you thinking for their final win total?
You know, I'm thinking they probably wind up with 11 to 12 wins, which, you know, is a great season coming off 13-1 last year, kind of catching everybody by surprise. That's part of the challenge. They're not going to catch people by surprise anymore. You know, Tom Herman had offers for just about anything he wanted when last season was over, and part of the surprise was that he actually came back. They're not going to catch teams by surprise. Ward is not going to catch teams by surprise. Their offense isn't going to catch anybody. So I think, but I still think you're looking at another 11 win season minimum.
Yeah, I put them down for 11. I think they'll drop one of those two, more likely the Oklahoma game. But this
right.
will be an exciting team to watch, and I do think they make it to that New Year's Six Bowl. Next up on our list, we have Ole Miss. They are tied for 12th. They are 11th in the AP poll. They return a team that was one crazy lateral away from being in the SEC title game last year, and they raised their win total each of the last five seasons. On the offensive side of the ball, Chad Kelly returns with a reliable tight end in Evan Engram, and they bring in the number one recruit in the country in Greg Little to fill the gap that Laramie Tunsil left on the blind side. So what do you think about the Ole Miss offense coming into this year?
I think the Ole Miss offense will go as far as Chad Kelly can take it, and I know that sounds cliche, but just remember, he's had some hernia issues, some health issues. If he can come back fully healthy, he's got enough. He lost Laquon Treadwell, but he's got enough there at the wide receiver position. He's got enough around him. His offensive line, I think, is good enough. That, you know, they've got 11 starters returning, which isn't that much, but they had a lot of guys get a lot of experience last year because they got hit by injuries about halfway through the season. They had some guys coming off the, you know, who would have been role players coming off the bench, who got a lot more playing time last year. So while they only have 11 returning starters, they have a lot of players coming back who saw a lot of significant game time. So I think that, you know, it's all about Kelly's health. It's all about consistency for them on offense. I mean, they beat LSU, Mississippi State, and Oklahoma State by a combined 60 points at the back end of the season. And so it's there. It needs to be there on a consistent basis, which is what they were missing last year.
Yeah, I think the key is whether they can get a balanced ground game outside of Kelly to really help him just kind of move along this year. And then on the defensive side, they do lose three of their top four tacklers, but they obviously have lots of talent with the recent recruiting Hugh Freeze has been doing. One name to watch out for is DeMarcus Gates. I think he could have a big breakout year for the Rebels this year. And Phil Steele projects that they will have the most improved pass defense in the country. So this could be a unit to watch out for.
I think what you're going to see with the defense is, I think that, you know, 2014, when they kind of really hit their stride with you know, the Land Sharks, as everybody loved calling them, they were a little bit more attacking than they were last year. Last year, I think that they relied on their athletic skill a little bit more than they probably should have. And I think with, you know, the linebackers that they have right now are athletic, like you were talking about. They're not the biggest hitters, but they are athletic. I think if you go back to a more attacking style defense that you had in 2014, I think the results are going to be a lot better.
Yeah, and then as we look at the schedule, it's not the easiest to navigate. They start out the season against Florida State, and then they have Bama and Georgia in back-to-back weeks in weeks 3 and 4. It's conceivable that they start out 2-2 off the bat, which could really kill them down the stretch. And then as we move on, it isn't as tough, but they do have two back-to-back road tilts, one at Arkansas, at LSU, and then another late in the season when injuries could become a factor against two tough defensive teams in Texas A&M and Vanderbilt. What are your thoughts on
that? Yeah, I think that's true. I think you're right. I think 2-2 right off the bat is quite likely. You know, they've got Wofford in between the Florida State and Alabama game. And so I think, you know, if they come out of it 2-2, that means that they beat either Florida State or Alabama or Georgia, and I think that they can consider themselves off to a good start, frankly, at 2-2. You know, they've got Memphis as well, and again, as we were talking about a few minutes ago, Memphis isn't the same as they were last year, so that should be a win. You've got a bye week after that before you head to, as you pointed out, back-to-back road games at Arkansas and LSU. That's tough. I mean, that is two tough consecutive weeks. You know, here's a game to watch. And I know it sounds kind of like a random thing to throw in there. You know, the SEC is always known for building in those soft out-of-conference games in the middle of November or before a rivalry game. They're playing Georgia Southern on November 5th. And I'm going to tell you, it is not going to be an easy game. Georgia Southern is one of the better FCS schools. It's not going to be an easy game. So they've got a difficult schedule, and our pollsters put them at 12. I will tell you that my particular vote had them a little further down, closer to 15, because I see them with a 9-win season, which is a step back from last year.
Yeah, I had them at 9 wins too, and that puts them just under their over-under of 9.5 for this year.
Right.
And next we move on to the Big Ten and Michigan State. They are tied with Ole Miss for number 12. They're also ranked number 12 in the AP poll. They're coming off a playoff berth in a program record-setting year. And if they had some good Hail Mary defense, they would have been undefeated going into that playoff game. The Connor Cook era is over for the Spartans. Tyler O'Connor has been named the starting quarterback. He should be able to be solid, if nothing. And then LJ Scott could be their next workhorse in the Le'Veon Bell or Jeremy Langford mold. And then they lose two studs in Aaron Burbridge and Shalit Calhoun. So this team could take a step down, but we always count out Michigan State, and they always figure out a way to pull it out. So what do you expect from them?
Boy, I think you hit it on the head. I think it's easy to look at their losses that they had. To me, one of the biggest losses of anyone in the, you know, in their caliber of football was losing Jack Conklin on the offensive line. I mean, he was just an absolute workhorse. The guy went from being unrecruited and a walk-on to just being an outstanding offensive lineman. They lost Connor Cook, as you pointed out. They lost two wide receivers. It took Taylor O'Connor 8 months to win the quarterback battle. So I think it's easy to look at them and say, wow, this is just a down year for Michigan State. But, you know, D'Antonio does a great job, and he gets his team prepared, and they're generally fundamentally highly skilled. You know, their linebacker, they lost six starters on defense, but they are getting back Ed Davis, a linebacker, missed all of last year with an injury. And so I think that that's a big help in terms of experience and leadership in that front seven. I think because of losing Connor Cook, and I mean, LJ Scott will step in as a starting running back. He had just a tick under 700 yards last year, but I look for their offense to be clock management, methodical, especially early on until they get their feet under them. You know, they've got a couple of tough early season games, and I think that they're not going to ask O'Connor to win those games. They're going to ask him to manage those games.
Yeah, hopefully he can kind of gain some confidence in that first Furman game. And then they have that early bye, which Mike Lovell in our last pod talked about how that's kind of a disadvantage because you can't really rest up for injuries like a normal week 7 or 8 bye that most teams have. But following that week 2 bye, they have a tough 4-game stretch where they go at Notre Dame and then home against Wisconsin, at a sneaky Indiana team that can put points on you in a hurry, and then home against BYU. What do you think about that early season schedule?
I think they're going to have a tough time against Notre Dame. Notre Dame's skill players are just that much faster than Michigan State's. Notre Dame is going to want to speed up the pace of the game, while Michigan State wants to turn it into a Big Ten grind-out game. You know, Wisconsin isn't the same Wisconsin that we've seen in past years, but still a very good game. Indiana, like you said, Indiana can put points up quickly. People should not be sleeping on Indiana. I think it's feasible for Michigan State to come out of those first four games at 2-2. And then you're looking at BYU after that, which, you know, let's face it, BYU isn't a walk in the park either.
And we haven't even mentioned yet the home game against Ohio State and Michigan, and then at Penn State, the three kind of typically the biggest games on their schedule. So I personally see them at about 8-4, which is exactly at their over under. What is your prediction for the Spartans?
Yeah, I think I can see 8-4. A good season, a successful season, is 9-3. A reasonable season, reasonable expectations, is 8-4.
I agree. And now we move on to USC, which was kind of the biggest jump between our poll and the AP poll. They're number 14 in our poll and number 20 in the AP poll. Where did you have USC in the top 25?
For my own personal voting, I had SC at 16.
Okay, so right smacked out in the middle.
Right.
They're a very interesting team to me. They bring in Clay Helton, who comes in after going 5-4 during the interim with wins over Utah and the big rivalry game, which I think ultimately got him the job by beating UCLA. And he brings in Clancy Pendergast, who is a terrific hire at defensive coordinator and should be able to really prop up this defense. They return all four starters in their defensive backs, but only one returning starter on the front seven. So I think the defense is the key for them, actually, instead of the offense like most teams. And they had a plus 11 turnover ratio last year, so I think that could also be another key. What do you expect out of this USC defense?
I think the USC defense, as you point out, their defensive backs are fantastic. Dory Jackson, Amon Marshall, probably one of the best defensive backfields in the country. You know, significant loss in Sua Cravens, but not as significant as some might think, in the sense of when you watched SC a lot last year, Sua Cravens would rely on his instincts quite a bit and would take chances. And when you have a linebacker and a hybrid player like he was doing those types of things, if it doesn't work, you're hanging your defensive backs out to dry. I think that what you're going to see with Pendergast is you're going to see a system defense. You're going to look at the schemes of the defense and see some fundamentally sound defense. I'll also say this, as you pointed out, they lost a huge amount of their front seven. And so they're going to be relying on a lot of guys who got some playing time but have never started. You know, Khalil Rogers is going to move over to the defensive line from the offensive line to give them an anchor, to give them some experienced leadership over there. But also, from what I've seen so far, and I've seen quite a bit of them in camp, you know, you're looking at guys like Rasheem Green and Noah Jefferson, who are sophomores, and Jacob Daniel. And I think what I'm seeing is these guys are progressing a lot faster than what people would have expected. They got some playing time last year, never started, but they are progressing very quickly. So I think that that first game against Alabama will be a huge test for SC's defensive line, but I think SC probably doesn't have as much to worry about as we probably would have thought a couple months ago.
Yeah, those guys, Green and Jefferson, are kind of raising up to expectations a little bit earlier. They were highly touted recruits coming in, but they're reaching their potential earlier than we expect, which must be a happy thing to hear if you're a Trojan fan. And then offensively, they bring in T. Martin he gets elevated to offensive coordinator, and he inherits 10 returning starters on the offense, but the one that is leaving is the QB. Cody Kessler, he's gone. Max Brown will now have his shot to start after waiting 2 years. He does have some playmakers around him, and Juju Smith-Schuster and the dynamic running back duo of Justin Davis and Ronald Jones. So this should be a solid offense. What have you seen out of them so far?
I think what you're going to see out of SC is, and you saw a little bit of it towards the end of last season when Helton took over as the interim coach, a little bit more of a traditional pro-style offense, a little bit more of the go to the run game first and throw downfield second. Part of the reason why it had hits and misses last year was because Kessler was not exactly adept at throwing on the run. You have guys in Max Brown and even Sam Darnold. It took Max Brown. Max Brown was the assumed go-to quarterback after Kessler, but Sam Darnold was good enough that he gave it a run up until about a week ago. And that's how good both of them are. It wouldn't surprise me to see Darnold get some playing time early on. But with Brown, you're going to see a guy who's got a stronger arm than Kessler did. But SC's offensive line is really the strength of the team right now. Zach Banner is an absolute beast. A quick little anecdote. When I was covering Pac-12 Media Days for Last Word on Sports, I was actually in a food line next to Banner. Now, you know, I'm just a regular average size guy. Banner is 6'9", 340 pounds. And when I watched him load onto it, when I watched him load the food onto the plate, he looked at me and he said, "I can't eat as much. I dropped 40 pounds during the off season in order to gain more quickness."
Wow.
I'm like, you know what? You can weigh whatever you want. It's fine. When you're that big, man, you do what you got to do. You be you. Their offensive line is really going to be the strength. And I think so. I think that lends itself to Helton running and T. Martin running more of a pro style offense with ground game first.
Wow. He sounds like quite the intimidator. As we look at the schedule now, I kind of broke it up into thirds. The first and last thirds are kind of the tough ones, and the middle ones, they have to win to have any chance at competing in the South. First third, you got Alabama to start off the season, like you said, which will be obviously an incredibly tough task. And then they get Utah State, and then they get the double away games at Stanford and at Utah, which have been two of the more difficult places to play in the Pac-12 of late. And then that middle third is the easy one with Arizona State, Colorado at Arizona, and California. I expect them to – they should win those four. Who knows with the Trojans. Then that last four is about as tough of a stretch as you can get in college football. Home against Oregon, at Washington, at UCLA, and home against Notre Dame.
Right.
Just break down that schedule. It's really brutal. It's the number one schedule in the country.
Yeah, you know, and breaking it down, doing it in sections like you did, I think makes a lot of sense because you look at those first four games, and I expect SC to lose to Alabama. They'll beat Utah State. They will lose to Stanford, and they'll beat Utah. So you come out of that really tough stretch 2-2. I completely agree with you. They need to win the next four games, Arizona State, Colorado, Arizona, and Cal. I think SC beats Oregon, beats Washington, loses to UCLA, and loses to Notre Dame. So I think that, you know, the Pac-12 championship will, for the South, will come down to that UCLA-USC game. And I think that, you know, that UCLA wins a close one, that, you know, we can get to that later on with the UCLA schedule. But I think that that's a huge upside for SC because I think that now you can look at SC and say, here are games that are must win. And you look at it and say, yeah, and they're going to win them. I think a year ago, even 2 years ago, it was like, well, they should win these games, but who knows? I think that some of these games, they're going to dominate teams. I think that they're going to dominate Arizona State, clearly Colorado. I think they beat Oregon. So I think that there's a big upside with the team this year. One of the things Clay Helton told me, I asked him during the Pac-12 media days, I said, do you feel any extra pressure? Because you've got to know you were not the fans' first choice. They wanted a big-name coach. And he said, I'm not worried about it at all because we're going to win enough that people will forget about that. He said, I have the relationships already because I was an interim for 2.5 months. And so I've got the relationship with these kids. He said, I don't feel like I'm a first-year coach. I actually feel like this is my second year already. And so I think that makes a difference. It makes a difference in the approach. You're going with a guy who is very sure of what he's doing.
Well, as both a Colorado and an Oregon supporter, I hope that they don't just run through them. like you say they might.
Yeah, I don't think they'll run through Oregon, but I think they'll beat Oregon. And Colorado, it's going to be a tough year for Colorado. So.
Well, last year they were, if Lufau doesn't get hurt, they could have beaten USC, but that's a whole different podcast. I could have said that for the last 8 years as a Colorado fan, but
exactly.
I'm past that. Let's move on to TCU now. They're ranked number 15 in our poll and number 13 in the AP poll. Coach Gary Patterson's back for another year. They're coming off a season in which they started off 8-0 and roasted number 5 in the country before losing to the two Oklahoma schools. They lose Trayvon Boykin and Josh Dodson, one of the most dynamic pairings in college football, but they get none other than Kenny Trill, a Heisman favorite. Just kidding. he has been named the starter, though. If he's good, he's excellent. If he's not, he's transferring to another school. And I guess that's a little harsh, but they do.
But pretty accurate.
The offense does only return 3 starters, though, so it won't be any easy day for Kenny walking into Fort Worth. What do you expect out of the TCU offense?
You know, I think the TCU offense is going to be, there's going to be quite a bit of make it up as you go along, because I think that, as you pointed out, when Hill has a hot hand, when he's in a rhythm, he is really that good. The problem is he's got no history of consistency, and he can be just as bad as he is good. And so I think without Boykin and without Dodson, they lost a lot. They're only... they're returning one running back with any real experience in Kyle Hicks, who had 262 yards rushing last year. So I think that the offense is not going to be the high-powered, high-wire act that people are used to. I think they got to get used to, running some clock. They've got a freshman running back, actually, that is really good. The kid is 6'3", 225 pounds, and I've seen tape of him, and he is a smasher from Humble, Texas, and I'm sure I'm going to butcher his last name, but his name is Deo Olanula, and he's really, really something to watch in short yardage situations. So I think we're going to see a different TCU offense than what we're used to seeing. I don't think it's going to be the high wire act that we've had in previous years.
It'll be interesting if Sonny Cumbie and Doug Meacham are okay with that, though, because that hasn't really been their style. So we'll see if they play it smart or just stay with the system in that aspect.
I think if they try and shove the system in there, I think they're going down in flames, because I don't think they have the talent to match the system.
Yeah, I agree. And then as we look at the defense, it's kind of starting to look more like a Gary Patterson type of defense. They return first-team All-Big 12 defensive end Josh Caraway, who's quite the great player, and this team really is built to kind of get back to its typical TCU defense days. They're coming off a thrilling bowl victory over Oregon that I witnessed and cried about, but they should be a completely different team this year, and we'll just see how that fares. What do you expect about out of their defense and looking at their schedule?
Well, I think, one of the things to remember is they had a lot of injuries last year in the defensive backfield and wound up giving some of the younger players experience. And so while, again, they're one of those teams that they lost some starters, they've got a lot of guys coming back with game experience. So I think the defense actually is going to wind up carrying them in some of the games, whereas, previous years it was, defense keep them in the game as best you hold on while the offense runs over everybody or throws it over everybody. I think we're going to see the defense play a much bigger role in TCU's success this year.
And then as we start to look at the schedule, in the front half of the schedule, the two games that really stick out to me are two home games, one against Arkansas and one against Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
So really, ideally, you see them coming out of that stretch only 5-1, and then they get the just typical Big 12 schedule with a bunch of passing offenses, and I think that really plays into TCU's hands, and I think they could fare very well with it with the likes of West Virginia, Texas Tech, Baylor, Oklahoma State. I don't have to read the whole Big 12 to you, you know who's in it, but
right. No, look, and you've got Kansas State at the end of the schedule. I think that the schedule sets up well for them in the sense of they've got a stretch where, and again, not repeating the Big 12 roster, but you know, you've got Kansas, West Virginia, Texas Tech. There's three should be guaranteed wins right there. Baylor, probably a win right there. Oklahoma State's going to be tough. But it sets up well that they don't have any particular stretch of games where you're looking at 2, 3, 4 games in a row going, oh, my gosh, how do they get through that? So the schedule sets up well for them to be competitive in the Big 12, competitive being, you know, for the top 2 or 3 spots.
Right. Their over-under is 8.5. I think they'll get that, whether it's 9-3 or 10-2. What are you thinking?
I think 9 is a right number for them.
I have them at 10-2 just because I believe in the coaching and the defense, but it should be a top 3 team in the Big 12 for sure, regardless.
Absolutely.
Of what happens.
Yeah.
Now we move on to the Washington Huskies, who I surely have some thoughts on. They're coming off a 7-6 year, and they are gaining lots of experience after losing just 15 Letterman from a season ago. But I do have some questions about them and their meteoric rise, really, in this spot. I think this is actually a good spot for them, but I've seen them other places where they are much higher. First, can they beat multiple good teams? Last year they beat USC, but were 0-6 against the rest of the S&P Plus Top 50. And Jake Browning hasn't been good against good teams yet so far. He's been great against the likes of Utah State, Arizona, Oregon State, and Arizona State. But he struggled in those USC and Oregon games. And finally, is that offensive line going to step up to the task? They were 83rd in adjusted sack rate a season ago, and they really need to improve in order to protect Browning and give Miles Gaskin lanes to run. What are your thoughts on this Husky team?
Wow, I think you covered it really about as perfectly as you can. One of the interesting things is the idea of the meteoric rise. At Pac-12 Media Days, Chris Peterson walked in and he said, you know, it's really interesting how we keep getting better, according to the media and the experts, without having played a game since December.
That was funny.
But yet the expectations keep going up. He said, I figure if we don't play for another 6 months, maybe we'll be top 5 in the country. you know, I think, look, Browning was a true freshman, and I think some of the ups and downs that he faced against the better teams last year was, you know, what you expect in some cases out of a freshman. When he's good, he's really good. I like Jake Browning. I think he's going to be a very good quarterback. I mean, he threw for just under 3,000 yards last year. And, you know, I think that they've got enough talent. I think that the offensive line, rather, is going to be significant because they're going to put a lot of the game on Browning. Their running backs are all 5'11 or smaller. There are no big bruising backs that you can rely on to do some clock killing in critical times. You're going to be relying on Browning. They've got John Ross III coming back after missing last season with an injury. He's one of the fastest downfield guys in the conference. So he's got some weapons, but the offensive line's got to buy him time, because there isn't really a significant running game to rely on.
Yeah, I kind of just talked about all their negatives, but there are plenty of positives, and there is a case to be made for why they're up in this spot. Miles Gaskin, he might be the third best running back in the Pac-12. The defensive backs are really, really good. They're up there with the likes of the UFC defensive backfield. And the defense overall is just very good, and Chris Peterson is a damn good coach. And you mentioned John Ross, who could be a top target, which Jake Browning badly needs.
Well, and I think here's one of the things you look at with their offense. And again, I go back to Browning being, not to make excuses for him, he doesn't need me to do that, but to being a freshman, in their 6 losses last year, they averaged 18 points a game. In their final 3 games of the season, when they really kind of seemed to find a rhythm, they averaged 43 points a game. And I think that that's where you get people looking at how they finished and kind of having high expectations going into the next season, whether Peterson agrees with him or not.
Right. And then as we look at this schedule, it really starts out pretty nicely for the first four. It's a nice chance for the Huskies, because they are still pretty young, to gain some confidence. Rutgers, Idaho, Portland State, and then at Arizona. But then it ramps up really quick with probably their two toughest games in the North, with Stanford and then at Oregon before the bye. What do you think about that early season schedule?
I'm looking at them going 4-2 easily, best case in that, but I actually think they have a shot at being 5-1.
Yeah, I agree.
4-2, four and two is a given. Anything below that, and Peterson's got to reassess what he's doing. 4-2 is a given. 5-1 is a real possibility, though.
Right, and they have struggled with Oregon recently. Duck fans kind of joke that it isn't even a rivalry at this point, but I do think that it'll be a fun game to be at. And then the back half, it's not too much tougher. They go to Utah, which will be a tough game. They host USC, and they go to Washington State in the Apple Cup. That's three pretty tough games. How do we see it shaking out for the Huskies?
Well, I mean, the back half of that schedule, they're likely to beat Oregon State. I actually think that it's going to be a very tough game, but a winnable game at Utah. I think they beat Cal. I think they lose to SC, beat Arizona State, and boy, the Washington State game is gonna be probably one of the most fun games to watch that last weekend of November. But I think Washington wins it.
So what does that put them at for you?
So that puts them at, if I've got my math right, puts them at 9 wins.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm seeing out of the Huskies. The over-under I found was 10, which seems a little high to me.
I think 10's high.
Yeah, so I would definitely take the under on that. Next up, we go down the Pacific Coast to the UCLA Bruins, a team that you know a lot about. You're kind of from that area. I'll let you just take it, and I will add in whatever I feel necessary.
Yeah, look, this is going to be a strange year for Jim Mora. It's hard to imagine that someone's on the hot seat like Mora is. And I'm not going to say his seat is hot, but it's getting pretty warm because they don't finish strong. They ended last season 8-5 overall, 5-4 in conference. They lost 3 of their last 4, including the Foster Farms Bowl. So when you're getting beat by your rival and then you're losing in a third tier bowl game, you know, no offense to the Foster Farms people, but you've got issues. You've got challenges. One of the biggest things to look for out of UCLA is a change in offense, and Jim Mora will absolutely refuse to admit that he's changing the offense. Noel Mazzone left to Texas A&M, took his spread offense with him. It was horribly misused last year with Josh Rosen. You watch enough UCLA film, and you could see that they were trying to run the same offense with Rosen that they ran the previous year with Brett Hundley, and their skill sets are completely different. Rosen is not fleet of foot like Hundley was. He was not a legitimate threat to run. So to run the same offense was absurd. The interesting thing watching Mazzone leave for A&M, knowing what we know in L.A., was it was a good opportunity for him to go, and really probably more so than people realize, because a lot of us in the media here were not sure he was actually going to be coming back to UCLA. Mora had not decided on a change, but I think he certainly, when Mazzone went to him and said, hey, look, I've got this opportunity at A&M, I have no doubt Mora urged him to take it. So they ramped up Kennedy Polamalu. He was an assistant coach on staff. He's now the offensive coordinator. They brought Marcus Tuiasosopo over from SC. He's the new quarterback coach, replacing Mazzone's son, Tyler. So you're going to see more of a pro-style offense, even though Mora has adamantly refused to label it that. But I've been to camp. I've seen it run. I've seen what they're running. It is more of a drop-back, go-downfield type of offense. Look for receivers over the middle. Use the sidelines. there's a lot less of the quarterback sprinting out and throwing on the run.
And I think this team could be just as balanced as they were a year ago. Paul Perkins was very underrated across the country. He was a very, very solid back, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
I think Soso Jamabo and Nate Starks can fill his shoes pretty nicely and continue that balance. And then as we look to the other side of the ball, they should be a very, very talented defense with Eddie Vanderdoes coming back from injury, along with eight other starters. So look for this defense to be in the top half of the conference for sure.
They've got all their defensive backs returning. There is actually a little bit of gaining in the defensive backs by losing someone, and that they took Ishmael Adams, who quite honestly was the weakest link in the defensive backfield for years, and they moved him to wide receiver. And so, you know, it helps the wide receivers because they needed more depth since they lost three of them last year. But it also takes them out of the defensive backfield, and they've got all four starters returning. And I think the defense is going to be really good. I think you're going to see a lot out of Kenny Young, a linebacker, and Jayon Brown, a linebacker, that these guys are going to be difference makers on the defense. As you said, Eddie Vanderdoes blew out his knee in week one, and he's an all-conference defensive lineman, so having him back will be a big deal for that defense.
And then as we look at the schedule here, they have a decently tough non-conference starting at Texas A&M, which I think they could drop depending on how you feel about the Aggies. And they also go to BYU, which they should win, but it's not going to be an easy one for sure. But then I kind of like the way their in-conference schedule sets up. Their road games are very manageable with ASU, Washington State, Colorado, and California. And they also avoid Washington and Oregon out of the north. They do get Stanford, which will be a tough game. And then that late season tilt, as always, against USC should be tough. But I really like the way their schedule kind of sets up for them.
I think it works out well. I think that first game is going to tell you a lot, because if there's a weak spot or a question mark on UCLA right now, it's the offensive line. And very penalty prone last year. They had a couple guys that they thought they were getting Jake Rowlerson from Texas, a graduate transfer, who was going to be the starting center, but he didn't make it past admissions in the graduate school department at UCLA, so he's at Arkansas instead. There's some question marks, and in that first game, they got to play against one of the best offensive linemen, one of the best defensive ends in all of college football, Myles Garrett. So you're going to see a lot of what UCLA season is going to be based on how good the offensive line holds up. I think one of the challenges for UCLA is that they've got Stanford very early. And Stanford has been Jim Moore's bugaboo. Well, it's been UCLA's bugaboo for 7 years. UCLA has not been physical enough to hang with them. I don't expect UCLA to beat Stanford, but if UCLA can hang with them and come out of that early season game earlier than it usually is and come out of it relatively healthy and not beat up by a physical team, then I think they've got a really good season in front of them. I think that the Pac-12 South comes down to that SC-UCLA game at the Rose Bowl in mid-November.
So the over-under is 9 games, which I think is about right.
On the schedule, I think that's right on the mark.
Yeah, I agree. I think they could go 10-2, but it's just always UCLA's thing to kind of drop one that they're not supposed to. So I kind of expect them to do
There is a saying in Westwood that no one damages UCLA season more than UCLA.
Very true.
They shoot themselves in the foot routinely.
Yeah. So 9-3 for you? Now we transition to Louisville. They're coming off a 8-5 season. Bobby Petrino enters his third year back with the Cardinals. Leading the offense is Lamar Jackson, who has been a trendy Heisman sleeper pick for some people. He's gotten a lot of pub, surprisingly. I was a little bit surprised to see coming into this offseason. He's got great size, and he's coming off 960 rushing yards in just 7 starts. And he's got his top 10 receiving options all back. And a fun fact, they're all above 6'3", which I think kind of lends its hand to Lamar Jackson a little bit, just because he can be a little sporadic with his throws, so that'll kind of help him. They do have Jamari Staples, James Quick, and Jaquay Savage, who are three very solid receivers, which kind of bolster that. And then their biggest question on offense is the offensive line. It's been a struggling unit for the last year or so, and that'll really be the key to this team this season.
Yeah, I think part of what happens with Jackson, and you were talking about the pub that he got in the offseason, and I think it's kind of like how we had talked about Washington earlier, how you finish creates the offseason buzz. And when you look at Jackson, I mean, he had 227 yards passing and 226 rushing in the Music City Bowl. So all of a sudden, there's all the fanfare of what he can be, because that's the last time we saw him and that's what we have to go off of. You know, I mean, he ran for 1,100 yards last year. He threw for 1,800 and change. So he had a really good year. The offense is very explosive with him. The receivers are big. They're tall. Makes it very difficult on defensive backs in a lot of cases. And as you said, gives Jackson a little bit of a comfort period. The key to the offense has got to be cutting down on the turnovers. I mean, they were just insane last year. 15 interceptions. They lost 12 of 26 fumbles. You cannot have that kind of turnover margin and compete with the bigger programs in the country.
And defensively, they returned eight starters, including stud pass rusher Devontae Fields. But they do lose another stud up front in Sheldon Rankins. But this should be a relatively solid unit in the conference.
Yeah, I think losing Rankin is not easy to replace, but you had a lot of guys who got a lot of experience coming in off the bench last year. So I think their defense will be all right. It'll be as good as it needs to be. It doesn't need to win games for them.
And then as we look at the schedule, I really just point out three key games for them. Week three, at home against Florida State. Week five, at Clemson. And then, as we said earlier, that late-season game at Houston. So those are the three that I could really see them dropping. And then just another interesting game just that I'll be interested to watch will be the Louisville-Duke game on a Friday in October. I don't really see them losing that because it's at home, but it could just be a fun one to watch. What do you say about the Cardinals?
No, I see those three games specifically as losses, Florida State, Clemson, and Houston, and everything else should be winnable. It is winnable. They should be able to do it. So I'm looking at nine wins out of them.
Yeah, I agree. And that's right where their over-under is at, right at nine. And Houston, that Houston game, Houston might just be a little bit better of a version than Louisville.
Agreed. I think the offense, you know, the dynamics are a little bit different. But the style of offense in terms of what they're looking to achieve, how they're looking to get there, there are a lot of similarities. And I think I do agree Houston's a better version of it, a more consistent version of it.
Right. Very true. So now we move on to Iowa, number 19 in our poll, number 17 in the AP poll. They're coming off a 12-0 regular season, a record-setting year for them. Before they ended up dropping their last two games against Michigan State in the conference championship game and then getting blitzed in that Rose Bowl game against Stanford. Kirk Ferentz, he's just back. This team is just the classic Iowa team. C.J. Beathard is probably one of the better quarterbacks they've had. He's very steady, just knows how to run the offense. They lose Jordan Kinzeri, their leading rusher, but LaShawn Daniels and Akram Wadley, or both, they should be able to step up in that position as they had to a little bit last year with Kinzeri getting injured. And also back is their leading receiver, Matt Vandenberg, and the left side of that line. So the offense should be pretty solid again, if not improved. What do you see out of the Hawkeyes' offense?
Yeah, I think you hit it right. The key being the three returners on the offensive line, the left side of the line. They've got three running backs back from last year. You know, look, C.J. Beathard is fine. He's going to get you 200 yards passing per game. They're going to rely on a offense that is balanced. It's not going to lean too heavily on any one running back. It's not going to lean too heavily on the quarterback. And the key in any Big Ten team is you've got your offensive line mostly intact. So, you know, I think it'll be as good as last year. I don't know that it'll be much better. I don't see anything that, you know, leads me to say, wow, watch this guy, you know, this incoming freshman who's going to light it up. I think it'll be good, and I think it'll be probably just as good as last year, which is fine, obviously, with where they went last year.
And then on the other side of the ball, they returned two absolute studs in middle linebacker Josie Jewell and cornerback Desmond King. Desmond King kind of leads that defensive backfield, which should be one of the best in the country. They lose some pretty key depth pieces, but I still think this Hawkeye defense should be about the same as they were last year. And
yeah, I agree with that. I mean, King won the Thorpe Award last year. They got eight starters returning. You know, they'll rely on the defense to keep it close, and I think the defense is good enough to do that and keep them in a lot of games.
And then the schedule is quite easy for them, I think. Their Big Ten road opponents that they'll face had a combined 10-30 record in conference a season ago, and then the non-conference schedule is very manageable with Miami of Ohio, Iowa State, and North Dakota State. The tough games will be at home with Northwestern, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Nebraska. The Michigan one is the one that I really point to as the one I think they'll pretty much for sure lose, and then I think they'll drop one more the rest of the season, but I do think they'll be a surprise 10-2 next year.
I look at what they were last year, and I'm reminded that they didn't have to play Ohio State, they didn't have to play Michigan, they didn't have to play Michigan State, and again, they get to avoid some of that again, but they do have to play Michigan, and I think that Michigan is, in my world, my own personal world, a top 16 right now, and they've got to play Wisconsin, and they're both home games, and that's fine, but I think they're going to struggle with those two games. I'm looking at, you know, I'm looking at two conference losses, maybe three. I don't think Nebraska beats them. Nebraska will give them some trouble at the end of the season, but I'm looking at two conference losses, which obviously is two more than they had during the regular season last year.
Yeah, and 10-2 will, it should be good enough to get them into that conference title game again.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
And that we both have them over that over-under of 8.5 rather easily.
Yeah.
And now we move to number 20 in our poll. The North Carolina Tar Heels, they're number 22 in the AP poll. They started off last season with a shocking loss to South Carolina, but they rallied to win 11 straight before falling in the ACC championship game and their bowl game. They lose their do-it-all quarterback, Marquise Williams, but they bring in Mitch Trubisky, who's probably gotten a good amount of pub as one of the better players who's returning a solid quarterback from last year, because we are losing a lot this year. What are your thoughts on them losing Williams and gaining Trubisky?
Look, I think Trubisky is going to do just fine. I mean, he's not the same kind of player as Williams in terms of the flash and the takeoff running. But, you know, look, I mean, he was 40 for 47 passing last year with six touchdowns and no interceptions. 550 yards. So I think he's more than capable of stepping in. And in a conference where, you know, you look at, in any conference, you look at the quarterbacks and what the turnover is, and usually you worry about teams who are breaking in a new quarterback. I don't think UNC has to worry about that. I think Trubisky is going to be just fine. You know, he's also, you know, he's got Elijah Hood to rely on, you know, 1,400-yard rusher last year. So I think he's going to, and he's got most of his offensive line returning. So I don't think Trubisky being a new quarterback or a new starting quarterback specifically is a concern for North Carolina.
And he also returns Ryan Switzer, a pretty solid option in his own right. And as you said, that offensive line should be pretty reliable for Trubisky. And then the defense, the defensive backs are really the strength of the defense. And Gene Chizik should kind of just raise their talent level just by his wit. Anything you want to... Anything you have to say with the North Carolina defense?
You know, look, Chizik has got to – there has got to be significant improvement on the defense. I mean, the defensive backs are strong. And part of the reason they're the strength of the defense is because Chizik's defense last year was 122nd in the country against the run. And it's just awful. He's got to – he's relying too much on the defensive backs. He's got to improve the structure. He's got talent in the front seven. They may not be everyone's All-American list, but he's got talent on the front seven. But he's absolutely got to have a more aggressive scheme. You can't – you're not going to go very far when everybody knows they can run the ball right up the gut against you.
Yeah, that'll certainly be the key, because that – a run defense was no bueno last year. And as we look at that schedule, they open the season against Georgia, which should be a tough one. It's really a coin flip game in my mind. They do avoid Clemson this year, but they will go to Tallahassee to face the Seminoles. And they also get Miami and Duke as their other two pretty tough games. Their schedule includes seven teams with new coaches this year, which is interesting. This team really should just be right in the thick of it in the Coastal Division race.
Yeah, I think they probably should still be contending for the Coastal Division title. I don't see anything that stops that. They've got a couple of losses on the schedule that are, you know, the Florida State game is most likely a loss. But they've got a pretty manageable schedule. And when you're throwing in, you know, basic gimme before you play North Carolina State, you know, you're playing Citadel, it gives you a little bit of a breather before your big last regular season game. So I think they should still be the top team in the Coastal Division.
So how many wins do you think for the Tar Heels?
I see another 11 wins for them.
Wow. I had them at just 9. So I think they lose to Miami, actually, and then they'll drop another one over the course of the season. But we're both over that over-under of 8.5.
Right. Yeah, I think the Miami game is a losable game, but I think that they will win it.
Yeah, it just depends how Rick kind of get things going down there.
Sure, sure. He's going to need some time.
Right, and now we go west a little bit to Oklahoma State, who is ranked number 21 in both polls. And they are another team who came off a solid start to last season, starting 10-0 before losing 3 games to solid teams in their own right in Baylor, Oklahoma, and Mississippi in the bowl game.
On offense, they returned their top passer, rusher, and receiver in Mason Rudolph, Chris Carson, and James Washington, and they lose only one starter off an offense that was 14th in scoring and 22nd in yards. This should once again be one of the most explosive offenses in the country, as we're accustomed to seeing. In Stillwater, what are your thoughts on the Cowboy offense?
Yeah, I think the Cowboy offense, I like Mason Rudolph a lot at quarterback. He's got one of the nation's best receiving units, coming off a 3,800-yard passing season. I like that a lot. I think that they will be a high-scoring team again. The running backs that they've got coming back, no one had more than 600 yards running, but they've got a lot of depth. And they get Barry Sanders coming in from Stanford as a graduate transfer, so they'll add even more depth. And I think, you know, they also have diversity in the running backs. They've got guys who will pound it up the middle. They've got guys who will take it out into the outside. So they're not going to rely on any one running back tremendously. But they'll break it down over a whole group of them. I like the offense a lot.
Yeah, and then the defense should be interesting. They lose two studs in pass rusher Emmanuel Ogba and lockdown cornerback Kevin Peterson. But they do return their top four tacklers, and with a little improvement, they should be able to break the 30-point barrier mark for the first time in 3 years. What kind of stands out to you on the Cowboy defense?
I think with the defense, I think what's going to happen is they got beat a lot last year in short yardage situations, but not by the running game. They were throwing so many players up in the front line that teams were just tossing 10-yard passes over them. and then picking up a lot of yards after catch. So I think you need to watch Oklahoma State's schematics on their defense and what their situational defense is, because they got burned too much last year in the red zone and short yard situations. I think if they can shore that up, they're going to have a really good year. I mean, they're playing only three teams that are in the, you know, projected top 25 teams this year on their schedule. So I think if they can shore up the defense a little bit, I think they'll have a really good year.
Those three top teams that they do play, though, are on the road, which is tough for Cowboy fans to stomach. Other than that, it does break kind of nicely. What do you see from the Cowboys this year in terms of record?
I mean, I look at another 10-win season for them. It is tough to be on the road the way they are. They do have a bye at the end of the season between the TCU game and the Oklahoma game, so you get a little bit of a respite. But, you know, that's tough at the end of the season to have to make those two trips. So I think another 10-win season is in order for them.
I have them at 9-3, 8-4, right on that mark, because I believe in Pittsburgh and Texas, but their over-under is right at 8.5, so that's right where I'm looking at, just because that schedule is pretty tough, and I'm not completely sold on that defense.
Okay. And I'm not quite sold on Pittsburgh yet.
Yeah, fair enough. Now let's move on to the Georgia Bulldogs, number 22 in our poll, number 18 in the AP poll. Gone is Mark Richt, and in comes none other than Kirby Smart, who is a Georgia grad, and he brings in coordinators Jim Chaney and Mel Tucker, who are nothing but solid. Offensively, I really wish I could tell you who the starting quarterback was, but Georgia kind of didn't give us any indication on that opening depth chart with it saying Grayson Lambert or Bryce Ramsey or Jacob Eason. But
right?
Wait, it gets better. Altogether on that opening depth chart, they had 21 ORs on it.
He wants to keep everybody guessing.
Yeah, he certainly does. But the running game should be very good, as we are accustomed to down in Athens, with either Nick Chubb, hopefully he is healthy and remains healthy, or if he's not available, Sonny Michel. What do you like out of the Georgia offense?
Well, I think the quarterback really is going to be an interesting situation, because, you know, I think just based on experience, you wind up starting the season with Grayson Lambert. It's just a guess, but it's just based on experience. And, you know, he's got a 63% completion rate last year, but almost none of that was downfield. When you break down his passing stats, most of the completion rate is at 20 yards and in. So, again, he's someone who's going to manage the offense. But you know, the first time he struggles, the fans are going to be clamoring to see Jacob Eason. They absolutely want to see him. I think it's probably too soon. I think you don't want to throw this kid into the fire too quickly and wind up damaging him if he doesn't do well. But I think at some point, it's bound to happen. You know, he's good. He's very good, obviously, but it's a matter of how long Kirby's going to be willing to wait before he puts him in. You know, I think the offense, you got a great running game. I mean, I know Chubb has not been taking full contact for most of camp, still rehabbing his injury from last year. And I know Sony injured his arm, you know, in a four-wheeler accident. And there are questions as to his availability for week one, but there's enough offensive weaponry there for them to be good.
Yeah. And then, as you said, five of the top six receiving options are back, and along with three offensive linemen. And then on the other side of the football, they do lose Leonard Floyd and Jordan Jenkins, two solid pass rushers, but they have tons of talent, as the Bulldogs have been recruiting well as usual, and they should just improve by just breathing the same air as Kirby Smart and Mel Tucker.
And they've got linebacker Tim Kimbrough coming back, which I think is significant, because while they did have some losses, you've got the anchor of your front seven coming back, and it helps everybody around him. You know, last year they were good enough. They kept everybody just under 17 points a game. And while they do lose some of that front seven, I think having Kimbrough back is significant. So I think the defense will be good enough again.
Yeah, and one name I want to point out is Natrez Patrick. I think he's going to have a breakout year for Bulldogs. Another linebacker next to Tim Kimbrough. And then as we look at the schedule, their first five is not the easiest to manage. They start against North Carolina, as we said, and then two games, Nichols, and then at Missouri. I don't see Missouri being the same tough team that they have been the last few years, maybe a down year for them.
Agreed.
But then you look at the next two, and it's at Mississippi and home against Tennessee, which really could make or break their season. How do you see them faring those two games?
I think the Tennessee game is the one you circle in red. Tennessee is getting a lot of hype for being that much better, and Butch Jones has done the recruiting work. And last year, Tennessee was a matter of they were in all the games. They couldn't hold leads in the fourth quarter. And so the assumption is maturation and development will change that. I think that Georgia is going to be competitive with Ole Miss. I don't know if they beat them. I mean, you know, we've got Ole Miss at number 12 for a reason. I think the Tennessee game will really determine the outcome of the conference Eastern Division, but also the success of Georgia's season. I think that game is that significant.
Yeah, and I don't know. I think that might fare well for the Bulldogs because Tennessee is just going to be staring at that Florida game all year. So maybe the Bulldogs can kind of just come up from behind and kind of steal that division from the both of them. And then
because even after the Tennessee game, you got South Carolina beatable, Vanderbilt beatable, Florida beatable, Kentucky, Auburn, Louisiana, Lafayette, and Georgia Tech all beatable. But yeah, you need to win that Tennessee game.
If they do get some solid quarterback play, I think this team has the chance to reach double-digit wins again and reach that SEC title game and give them a shot to get in the playoffs just as, like, a nice little dark horse. How many wins do you see the Bulldogs pulling out?
I see them with 10 wins and because of the schedule. Really, it's really mostly based on the schedule. You know what? I'm going to say 9 wins to play it safe. 10 would be hugely successful.
Yeah, I said 9-3 just because I think they aren't talented enough not to drop a game that they're maybe not supposed to lose.
But, well, I think because the quarterback situation is still such a big question mark.
Yeah.
I think 9 is realistic. 10 would be hugely successful.
But that's still over that over-under of 8.5. That would be a successful season for the Bulldogs in Kirby Smart's first year.
Right.
And so now we transition to the Oregon Ducks, ranked 23 in our poll, number 24 in the AP poll. I'm just going to start it off and give a nice little mini rant. The key this year is really just going to be Dakota Prukop. He's been named the starter. Last year when Vernon Adams, the other FCS transfer from last year, the offense was top five caliber in the country when he was healthy. But when he wasn't, the team really struggled. I do think they have improved quarterback depth, but that's not really the point. I think if he can just stay healthy and be solid, this offense has enough weapons around him to just kind of get close to the Oregon Duck offense of old that we are used to seeing. Today, QB coach David Yost said he feels like it's Christmas morning waiting to unwrap Dakota Prukop for that first game, which is exciting for Duck fans to hear. And then just around him, you got Royce Freeman, who might be the fourth best back in the entire nation, and Darren Carrington and Charles Nelson are a terrific receiving duo with plenty of depth behind them. The offensive line does give me some questions, but I think they will figure it out because that's just kind of what the Ducks have been doing for the most part of late. What do you see out of the Duck offense?
I think the Duck offense has got tons of skill, tons of speed. You know, my question with them is Dakota Prukop. I mean, everybody knew last year that Vernon Adams was going to be the guy, even when Mark Helfer kept saying, well, there's a quarterback competition. Everybody knew it was Adams. And I know that Prukup has been named the starter, and I know that, you know, Helfer had said a month or two ago that the decision had to be obvious before he would be named the starter. So it should give Oregon fans some relief that it came early enough that it wasn't, you know, a going into the last few days of the season before the starter was named. I mean, it means that Helfer saw something in Prukup that made it obvious enough. I think that at some point you gotta, you know, you're playing with fire year to year with 1 year quarterbacks. And I don't know at what point Oregon gets bit. I don't know if it's this year. I don't think so. But I think the entire success of the offense is relying on Prukup's shoulders.
Yeah, the positive news is that the second and third strings that they named for the travel team are both freshmen this year. So hopefully
right.
one of them two will step up in the next year and they'll have to.
Right. And because Travis Johnson's a very good player. I mean, he's got a good arm. He's got good skills. So, you know, hopefully if you're an Oregon fan, this is the last year you're playing with, you know, a 1 year quarterback.
Well, and Travis Johnson wasn't even one of those two. He's actually on the scout team to begin the year. He's fourth string.
Right. Right, right, right. But I'm saying I've seen film of him, and I'm saying in future years, expect a lot out of this kid. He really is good. But look, all the rest of the skill positions are there. Devin Allen, you know, being back now after having competed in Rio, and Royce Freeman. It's why the skill position players are absolutely there.
The only other key I have for their offense is just being able to snap the ball. Last year during the bowl game, their center got hurt, and it kind of just tore me apart. But then as we look at the other side of the ball for the Ducks, all I can say is, oh, boy, because last year they were nothing short of horrible. I don't think this team will be as much of a turnstile as they were last year. I think Brady Hoke under the helm will be an improvement. But I still don't think they will be even an average defense, which I think is where they need to be with maybe a slight step back in the offense.
I think you know, he had no choice but to demote Don Pelham to linebacker coach and look for a new defensive coordinator. And I hold Brady Hoke in high regard as a coordinator, not so much as a head coach, but definitely as a coordinator. But you're looking, every starting linebacker from last year is either gone or switched positions. And, you know, it's hard to replace someone like DeForest Buckner. And the defense was already, as you pointed out, giving up a lot of yards and points already, even with some skilled guys. So it's, you know, look, it's to me, there's only one way to go with this defense, and it's up. So any improvement in the defense is going to make a significant impact in Oregon season.
Yeah, I hope the linebackers can get up to Pac-12 speed, because last year they were way too slow to be up for that. And then the entire defensive backfield, they do return, but it's kind of a yes and no kind of thing, because they do have more experience, but they weren't any good last year. And then the other name, Tarodney Prevost, he is a solid player, but he just got suspended earlier this week, so that is not a promising sign. Any more thoughts on the Duck defense?
No, I mean, I like I said, I think there's nowhere to go but up. I think Hoke, you know, will make some improvements. The question is, does he have the talent there to work with? Does he have enough talent there to work with? So it's very much a TBD in my book.
And then as we look at the schedule, the non-conference isn't too tough. They do go into Nebraska, but I think they can pull that one out as long as Prukop is serviceable. And then in conference, they have the Washington schools back-to-back weeks. That at Washington State game will be tough, because each of the last 2 years, the year with Mariota, they struggled when they were in the Palouse. And then last year they lost at home to them, which was just befuddling. So that will be a tough one, because Washington State is still going to be a pretty good team this year. And then Washington at home will be the big one, because it's really the big rivalry game. And hopefully the Ducks can step up to the challenge. And then as we look at the back half, They have a tough three-game stretch in November with at USC, home against Stanford, and at Utah. If they can take two of those three, I think that'll be good, and I see them. I think their floor is 8-4. I think if Brewcop is very good, they can get to 11-1, but I will take 9-3. What are you thinking?
I think they're taking a slight step back from last year and getting 8 wins. I think the schedule is really challenging in stretches for a team that has as many question marks on one side of the ball as they do.
Yeah, and their over-under is 8.5, so we are split on that one. Next we go to the always fun to talk about Baylor Bears. They're number 24 in our poll, number 23 in the AP poll. They obviously had the off season that has been talked about plenty, and I like to stick to football here. This year's Baylor's team, though, they shouldn't be too bad. I know they lost a lot of their recruiting class, but that won't affect them this year as much. Seth Russell is back, and I hope he stays back, because they are lacking depth behind him, and I just don't. Neck injuries are pretty scary, so hopefully he can stay on the field and they don't push him back too soon. And then they have Shaq Linwood to anchor the run game. And as we saw in the bowl game last year, when they need to, they can turn on that run game and just dominate teams. And the Baylor receiving corps should be solid as always, despite losing Corey Coleman, who was extremely good in his own right. How do you like Baylor's offense?
I think Baylor's offense has potential. I agree that, you know, Seth Russell, he's 2,000 yards passing last year, and I agree that he's the key to this because he's got to stay healthy. There isn't anybody behind him. It's not like when they had Russell and they had Jarrett Steedham. This is it. This is who you got. And he's got some wide receivers. He's got a decent running game. You know, look, no one is happier that the football season is starting than Baylor. I mean, Saturday will be a moment of celebration just for the fact that they can talk football. So I think that actually that has some mental and emotional momentum for them, because I think that they're going to feel a sense of weight off of their shoulders. And I think that you're going to see the offense really do very well early on. Like I said, as long as they can keep Russell healthy, they've got a good enough offensive line to do it.
I do have some questions about both sides of the trenches as they return just one starter on the offensive line and the defensive line. So that, I think that'll really be the key for the season, because they do have a solid back seven in their defense. What do you think about the rest of the Bears squad?
Well, I think, you know, the offensive line, as you pointed out, they do have only one starter returning, but the other guys they have returning did see significant playing time last year. So right. I think they'll be okay on that. I think the defensive line has got a lot of question marks on it. I mean, they lost 4 senior starters. They lost a few other guys who transferred. So I think, frankly, as the season goes on a defensive front, I think the lack of depth winds up being a real cause of concern for them.
Yeah. And then as we look at the schedule, the first half is actually quite manageable. The only tough game I see in there is that Oklahoma State game on September 24th, which I could see going either way. It's good that they're at home. But then that back half is pretty tough, at Texas, home against TCU, at Oklahoma in a 3-game stretch, and then closing out the season against Texas Tech and at West Virginia. It should not be an easy one for sure. What are your thoughts on the Bears' schedule?
I think that the back half of the schedule is problematic for them because, A, it's already tough, even if you're a good team, and, B, as we just discussed, their lack of depth in key positions, you know, could be real troublesome for them by that point in the season. You know, you get physically worn down as the season goes along, and they don't have the horses to deal with it as they get into a tough part of the schedule.
So how many wins do you see Baylor pulling out?
I have them at 8.
Wow. I had them at 9, which is right at their over-under of 9. It's really tough to see a team take a step back like this, because obviously the scandal isn't okay at all. But if they if they would have just stayed intact, this program was really on the rise and was becoming a national power.
Sure. I mean, they had plenty of talent. They had plenty of recruiting. They had a good seasonal flow of recruiting every year. They were bringing in some top players at critical positions, but a lot of those guys are gone. And it's going to be a while before Baylor is Baylor again. You know, sadly, what they're going through probably isn't over yet. The worst of it may be, but it's not over yet. And so you're going to see some attrition.
Yeah. We now move on to our last team of the top 25, the Florida Gators. They're coming off a season in which they also start out strong, rose to number 8, and then finish the somewhat disappointing 10-4. I do think this is a pretty tough team to forecast. We don't know what we're going to get out of Luke Del Rio, who's recently named the starter, or whoever else may start this year, and whether it's Austin Appleby, maybe Felipe Franks. And then the running game, I have some big questions about. Mark Thompson comes in as a junior college transfer. He could be good, but we don't really know quite yet. But I do really like the Gator receiving core with Brandon Powell and Antonio Callaway. They're two very solid receivers in their own right. How do you like the Florida skill position players?
I think the skill position players, the running backs and the wide receivers, are good. Look, to me, Florida could just as easily be out of the top 25 as they are in it. I mean, to me, they're number 25 by a thread, because the quarterback position is, you know, is so random, a bit of a black hole at the moment, you know, with Greer being suspended and leaving and Treyon Harris leaving. You know, you've now got Luke Del Rio, who was a backup at a not very good Oregon State program. And that's your starting quarterback, at least for week one. Yeah. And, you know, I think that he's got the skill around him. The question is, can he utilize it? And I think that is a huge question mark.
And the rest of the team is pretty good. Jalen Tabor has been suspended for the first game. That shouldn't impact them too much if they face UMass. And then as we look at the schedule for the Gators, the key game for them, I think, what they're going to be looking at is that Tennessee game. They want to keep up that 11-game win streak, keep that in the mind of Vol fans on that October 1st. What other games kind of stick out to you on the Gators schedule?
You know, I think that's the critical one right there, because, again, that's from a team that is, from a team that's trying to find an identity, that game right there, which is a big game. It's got implications for the division championship. You know, they've got an 11-year winning streak, but you don't want to be that first team, that first class of whether it's the outgoing seniors or the incoming freshmen that loses to Tennessee. I think that mentally and emotionally, that Tennessee game is the biggest one on the schedule for them.
And as we look at the rest, just two games later, they do face LSU, which I think will be a loss.
Mm-hmm.
And then 3 weeks later, they have the world's largest cocktail party against Georgia and Jacksonville, which I just love. That's a great name. And then that final game at Florida State, which I could also see the loss. How
right.
many wins
oh,
do
absolutely.
You see the Gators getting?
8.
Okay, that's right at their over-under of 8. I had them at 9 just because I like the way their schedule worked out. I think they'll lose the obvious ones with Tennessee, LSU, and Florida State. But Jim,
yeah, I think they'll lose the obvious ones, and I think there's going to be one not so obvious one in there that they're going to lose because the quarterback play isn't what it should be.
Right, that's typically how it works. But I do think Jim McElwain has this program on its way up, and he knows how to run an offense, so it should be turned around in no time.
We agree on McElwain.
Yeah, and before we close this one up, Tony, I just have two quick questions for you. Which team from this group of 15 do you think has the best chance of cracking the playoff?
Wow. I would have to say, you know, based on schedule, I'm not sure that any of them really make it, but if there's someone who can creep into the top 4 because they pulled off some wins against some tough teams, then I'm going to go with Houston.
Yeah, just because they have kind of the fewest, like, most difficult games, so.
Right, and they've got the fewest positions to jump over in order to get there.
Right. And then final question, which team outside the top 25 that we didn't talk about today do you think can crack maybe the top 20 or 15?
I'm going to go with Washington State. I am sold on Washington State, and, you know, being on the West Coast, talk about being on the West Coast. The Rose Bowl is 10 minutes from my house, 10 minutes Surface Street drive from my house. So I see all the West Coast games. I see a lot of Washington State, and I am sold. Luke Falk is the real deal. If you haven't seen him, you live somewhere else in the country and you haven't had a chance to see this kid play quarterback, wow. I mean, 38 touchdowns in his first full season as a starter. We were talking earlier about Grayson Lambert having a 63% completion rate, but he doesn't go downfield. Falk has a 69% completion rate, and he's chucking the ball all over the place. Mike Leach doesn't even pretend to have a running game. He doesn't care. He puts Falk out there and says, you know, go ahead, stop us. I mean, the kid threw 645 passes last year. That's an insane number. But I love Leach's offense, and I love what he's got with Falk. He's got three really good receivers that have come in. They lost Joe Dahl, offensive lineman, to the NFL. But the offensive line is experienced. Their pass defense, it was all right. I mean, they only allowed 13 throwing touchdowns. They need to shore up their run defense. And I'm just going to admit, because I'm a sports reporter who follows these guys all across the country, teams all across the country, there is no sports reporter around who doesn't love talking to Mike Leach, the Washington State head coach. You ask him a question and just let him go on his diatribe for 5 minutes. You know, the guy is an absolute piece of work. I got to share a quick anecdote with you. I'll make it real quick about the Pac-12 media days. Everyone is used to seeing media days done like the SEC does it. The coaches go up, they give opening statements. You know, they're ready for questions. You raise your hand. Someone puts a microphone in front of you. The Pac-12 doesn't do that because they're too Hollywood chill for that. The coach goes and makes an opening statement. And then they say, all right, anyone who has a question, just come up to the stage. And the media just, you know, puts down their Diet Coke and walks up there, and they gather around and ask questions. Mike Leach doesn't want to do these things. He doesn't like them, and he admits it. So his opening statement was exactly this. Does anybody have any questions? Because he didn't want to give an opening statement. And the media just went up there, started asking questions. Someone wound up asking the guy about, what do you think of everyone playing Pokemon Go? Now, why would you ask a college coach that, except you're going to ask Mike Leach that because you know the answer is going to be entertaining. Someone demonstrated on their phone what it looked like, and Leach went on a 5-minute diatribe about the breakdown of society and how we walk into different corners of the room to text each other. And his closing thought was, we were better off when we had dirt clod fights in construction sites. Society was better. As a sports reporter, how do I not just love this guy?
Right. He's one in a million for sure. He is.
But in the real football world, based on talent, based on the quarterback, I like Washington State to break into the top 25, get close to the top 15. I don't know if they can get there, but I think they can get close.
I do think, just thinking about him in general, I think the way he thinks about the world is the way he kind of thinks about football. He just thinks about it differently, is just kind of why he's the one who came up with the air raid and kind of just revolutionized the college game.
I agree.
Well, I appreciate your time, Tony. We ran a little bit long, but you can't talk enough college football with the season right around the corner. Enjoy your week one, and thanks for taking the time.
All right, Austin. We'll talk soon. Take care.